Coming up, want to rent your car out and make some money? GetAround.com's Jessica Scorpio joins us to tell you how. Plus, Facebook's got a new app center, has a Hulu monopoly, and is killing SMS all in 1 week. All that, and Google Plus is beautiful. On iOS, anyway. That's weird. And it's all next on The Social Hour.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for The Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 60, recorded Monday, May 14th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It's episode 60 from Petaluma Twit World Headquarters. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I suppose this is the Canadian headquarters, and things are going well. How about you, Sarah?
Very well, thank you. It actually rained on my drive up from San Francisco today, which is bizarre because it's been like 95 degrees for the last couple of weeks in these parts. So I guess we're not really done with the end of spring, but that's cool. It'll keep the hills green for another month or so.
Well, I have to say we are finally getting into nice summer weather, so I think a lot of people are appreciative of this, but it makes working that much harder, Sarah, as I'm sure you can imagine.
Yes, absolutely. But we wouldn't miss this show. It is The Social Hour after all, and Amber and I are very social people, even if we can't talk that well on a Monday morning, at least one of us. But without further ado, let's introduce our guest for this week, the co-founder of GetAround.com, Jessica Scorpio. Welcome, Jessica.
Hi, great to be here.
Good to have you. Amber, when I was letting you know how excited I was that we had booked Jessica for the show, I said I met her at a party. It was at a friend's party, and I knew GetAround. Leo and I have actually talked about the service on iPad Today in the past as an app. And when I met her, I was like, oh my gosh, GetAround, that's so cool. Just the people that you meet hanging out at mutual friends' birthday parties. So, Jessica, you're not only the co-founder, but you're the director of BizDev, is that right?
Director of marketing, actually.
Director of marketing. So, for someone who's like, I'm not familiar with GetAround, I don't know how it works, how do you describe it to people the first time?
So, GetAround's a marketplace for peer-to-peer car sharing. Essentially, we let people who have a car share it with people who need cars. Our owners make up to $1,500 a month and on average about $400 a month. So it's some serious money to pay off your car or cover the cost of your car. And for renters, you can find anything from a Mini Cooper like we're seeing here or a Tesla Roadster. It's free to join and there's no annual membership fees, which was a deliberate thing on our end, basically to make there no barrier to car sharing. And what we're trying to do is we're solving a problem that we call car overpopulation. There's 250 million cars in America that sit idle 92% of the time, a billion cars on the planet, and that number is just growing. So we wanted to help change the way people see cars and enable more people to share their car when they're not using it.
Can you describe the process in terms of how someone would, after they've chosen a car, what happens next?
Definitely. So it depends what type of car you've rented. As you're seeing here on the screen, there's the GetAround Car Kit, which is our proprietary in-car device, which lets people accept a rental. And then actually the person could pick it up just using their smartphone. So it's similar to other car sharing services in that way, except with GetAround, you don't have to have a membership card. So we don't use RFID in that sense. Instead, your phone literally becomes your mobility device. And another option that a lot of people go for, especially when they're starting out, is you meet the owner and, you know, you talk to them for a couple minutes and then you swap the keys the owner would hand over the keys and tell you anything you need to know about the car.
I love this. I've just put in my home zip code because when you go to GetAround.com, it gives you a sense of, okay, well, let's you want to rent a car that's close to you? Probably. Okay, well, so what's available? So I've got a Toyota Prius, which is actually kind of interesting because I'm sort of a little bit in the market for a hybrid right now, and the Prius seems like a good call. I actually know exactly where this block is. I can tell by the picture. So Jean Caruso is she lives really close to me. She's got a nice car. It looks like it's in really good shape. She's given a little description of, you know, the cool stuff. It's got GPS, Bluetooth, even a cassette player. Wow, okay. So maybe that would appeal to me. Then she says her availability, basically, besides Monday, she doesn't drive her car very much. So this seems like a perfect opportunity for her to make, what, $8 an hour? And if I need it all day Thursday, then she's made, what, $64 or thereabouts. I can see where on a map to pick up the car. I love this. It makes perfect sense to me. I guess my question is, I might meet her. She might give me her keys. And we think, okay, neither of us are crazy. This seems like a pretty good deal. But what about insurance? That must be a question you get a lot. How does Jean know that I'm not going to come back with her car in four pieces?
Definitely. So a few different things on that. First off, on insurance, we provide a $1 million policy through our insurance partner, Berkshire Hathaway. So insurance was a really key piece for us. We provide primary coverage, and we also provide replacement vehicles, roadside assistance, 24-hour in-house support. So anything that happens, we take care of both all of our members, so the owners and the renters. In general, we've had extremely good experience, so almost never do we have an incident. So that's kind of facilitated for a few reasons. We have we do driver record checks, so anyone requesting a car through GetAround, the owner knows that it's they're a safe driver. We also have peer reviews in the site. So owners can choose only to rent to people that have all 5-star reviews, or they can, you know, obviously some people start fresh and you can be their first rental and then give them a review. But reviews play a key aspect in the whole process. It's also quite social, so you can find out if you have any friends in common or if you know the owner or renter. And so there's definitely some trust that forms. People are very respectful when they're sharing other people's cars. Usually they bring it back cleaner than they found it. Depending on what they're doing, sometimes we have someone who uses a car to go get baked goods and they have a little bakery, so they'll leave some cookies or something as a thank you. So it's definitely more community-oriented than traditional car rental.
I'm looking go ahead, Amber.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just looking at the site, and it looks as though most of the locations that I can see at least featured on the homepage are within the Bay Area. I'm just curious, I could see something like this working really well in the Bay Area. People are very digitally savvy. Are you in other cities, or are there plans to roll out to other cities?
Definitely. So our site shows cars based on your IP address. So I think that's coming from Sarah, and she is in the Bay Area. We're live in 4 other markets currently. Definitely, we started here. We felt like this was a great test bed, and we've found the demand all across the country has been overwhelming. We actually just passed 10,000 cars signed up on the site, so that was a nice milestone for us because it took Zipcar about 12 years to get to 10,000 cars. Last month, we launched in Austin at South by Southwest, and in February, we launched in Portland with a $1.725 million grant from the Federal Highway Administration. We're also in San Diego. So those are our 4 cities right now. We are quickly moving east and working to launch some more cities this year.
I love this. I mean, this is such a good idea. My boyfriend, we have 2 cars. I use my car all the time because I commute, and he never uses his car. His biggest problem is making sure his battery doesn't die when he turns his car on once a month or something like that, truly. So this is a perfect thing for him. I mean, a great way to make money, especially if you have an insurance policy that you're paying money on. I mean, at least take care of that. I'm looking at a car here. It's very nice. They did a little photo shoot with it down by the Palace of Fine Arts. A nice Lexus. And they've got some really nice pictures. You can see the interior. It's pretty fancy. But it does say here, FYI, there's a limit of 80 miles per day. So I think this is where kind of that honor system must really come into play, because the owner will know if I take this Lexus out and I drive 120 miles and I rented it for a day, they know that I didn't honor what their wishes were. So it's not as if I really get penalized, but maybe I get a poor review. from this person. So you're really incentivized to stick within the limits of what the owner is comfortable sharing.
Yeah, or at least be upfront and communicate what your purpose of renting the car is. If I'm sure that owner may be open to you driving a little bit further, but in their day rate, they've budgeted 80 miles a day. And we're kind of the platform, we're the marketplace. So however people want to share works for us. For example, most of the time the rentals are round trip. Wherever you pick up the car, you bring it back to that same location. But some owners are fine with dropping the car off at their office versus their home. And whatever works for the owners works for us, as long as it's within the guidelines of the site.
It feels a little bit like a car dating service in some ways, you know. It's really interesting. And when we think about online dating, the first thing I always think about is safety. And what do you recommend? Do you recommend if someone is going to lend out your car, let's say if you have a really nice luxury car, do you recommend that maybe you meet in at a third party location, like a coffee shop or something?
So we've actually had our first wedding already. And engagement. So the cars are being used for some pretty cool things, everything from road trips to special events. In general, most people decide to meet up, you know, at the intersection near their house. Some people do the car pickup straight from their house. Mm-hmm. We do a good amount of screening from the driver record checks. And we also make sure that people are using their real online identity. And we do some work to make sure that they are who they say they are. So in general, people can take as many precautions as they want. We want people to be safe to check people's driver's license. But there's definitely never been any issues so far.
And what about the rental price? I noticed that in general, things seem to be pretty affordable. There's a Ford Taurus near where I am in Petaluma right now, $8 an hour. There's no picture, but down below a little bit is a Honda Civic LX Coupe. Hey, that's like a car I used to have. That's $8 for an hour. You know, maybe I have to take a trip to IKEA or something. So that's, I don't know, $24 maybe for the whole thing. Works out well, especially when you compare it to services like, you know, Zipcar, that sort of thing. It seems really affordable. Do you give people some suggestions on what their car is worth and what they can probably get per hour? Because I guess it's within reason, you want to go as high as possible.
Yeah, definitely. So the minimum right now is $3 an hour and $15 a day. And we definitely have some cars in that range. We give a general recommendation, but we don't give specific recommendations based on make, model, or year yet. But we're hoping to come out with that soon. Definitely, we give control to the owners so they can choose whatever pricing they want. The Tesla owners, some people charge $50 an hour, some people charge $75 an hour. And I think part of our growth, the reason we've grown so quickly, is that we give owners a lot of flexibility and control.
Just one more question from me, and I'm not sure if you're going to be able to answer this one, but have you had any feedback from people who work in the car rental industry? Because I know we sort of touched on this off the top of our interview, but this would really, I think, you know, it's going to change that industry and potentially hurt them as well.
Definitely. So what we're doing is very disruptive. We're trying to change the way people see and use cars. And we have actually worked quite closely with some people in the automotive industry, car rental. All of them see the trend shifting away from car ownership as is. So in some ways, that will make car rental a good option for people who don't want to own a car. And we've had some smaller fleets actually interested in listing their cars on Getaround. Right now, we're focused on allowing individuals to share their cars, but we definitely see as an option in the future, all these fleets that sit idle, you could actually create better usage of them as well.
We've got some folks in our chat room who are, by and large, really excited about this, but still some insurance questions from people. And somebody brought up a good point. Dr. Mack in chat says, how does the service handle car issues if they occur during rental time? So let's say I rent a Tesla. I'm not the one that's, you know, crashing the Tesla into a wall, but maybe the Tesla gets a flat tire while I'm driving it, and now all of a sudden, whatever I was doing has to stop. Am I responsible for getting something fixed? What happens in that sense?
Definitely. So if it's a roadside assistance issue, we actually cover that fully through GetAround, so there's no additional fees to the renter for that type of service. We want to make every rental experience a great one, so that's something we decided to offer. If it's if it's actual physical damage to the car, whether or not that was the renter causing it or that happened during the rental period, that would be on the hook for the renter. Same thing with traditional rental cars. But in general, we take care of everything. So the renter would have to pay a $500 deductible, but or less if the damage was less. But beyond that, we actually take the car, get it repaired, and get it back to the owner as quickly as possible.
Oh, that's awesome.
Very cool. Thank you. This is very exciting. I'm just so it's great on so many levels, right? Especially with the environment. And like you mentioned, so many cars sitting idle. I had no idea the stat was that high, but not a huge surprise.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the idea of GetAround. I think, you know, the only real mark against it is it's not in more cities. But as you said, you're started in Bay Area. You're in San Diego as well. What are the other two markets that you're in?
Portland and Austin, and we're launching about four more cities this year.
Well, all right. Well, early congratulations for that. GetAround is, it's a fabulous service. And Amber, I absolutely agree with you. If there's a car that isn't being used, why not let someone else who needs it use it? And you get a little bit of money in return, or a lot of money, really. I mean, it depends on, I guess, how much you want to rent it out. Well, Jessica, I know you've got to run, but thank you so much for joining us. It was awesome to get a little more information on how GetAround works. Best of luck in the future, and onwards and upwards.
Thank you so much.
Go on east and GetAround.
Definitely.
All right, that's Jessica Scorpio, the co-founder and director of marketing at GetAround.com. If you're in one of the markets, definitely, and you've got a car you don't use or you need a car, definitely check it out. Thanks again to Jessica for joining us. Amber, what's your car situation? I mean, you know mine now. But do you use a car often? Do you find that you...
Not really. Well, see, I work from home, right? As you know. So, and Chris works from home too. So to be honest with you, we use a car maybe a few times a week. We only have one car. We live pretty much downtown in Toronto. So I can walk to the grocery store. It's, you know, just a couple of blocks away. I love walking around and doing all my errands. So we really do not... We wouldn't need a car necessarily, except for maybe on kind of the off occasion. But a service like this would be fantastic. I mean, especially just like you mentioned, to run errands, if you have to run out to IKEA or do a big grocery order, whatever it might be. But a fantastic service, especially in urban areas.
Definitely. Certainly urban areas. That makes perfect sense. It's funny, that Prius that I showed you, that person really does live two blocks away from me, or thereabouts. So it's like, it would be so great just to, not necessarily, I don't really need a car, but I
you just want to drive it.
I kind of like the idea of testing out a Prius. Let's say I was in the market for something and I wanted to get a used car. I mean, I might be looking at something like a 2005 Prius. I could take it for a spin for $8 for an hour, get a sense of how it works. And the uses of something like GetAround are great. It's obviously one of those things where not only is there insurance to worry about, but also car depreciation. I guess you figure, well, I'm either driving it or if Amber borrows it and drives it, I mean, the mileage is getting racked up either way. But then again, I might be kind of heavier on the you know, the brake pedals than you. So I guess that's the sort of thing you just have to think about if you aren't actually going to be observing someone who's renting your car and how they're driving it. Even if it comes back looking fine, you never really know what was going on unless you've got some sort of like a baby monitor or something in the
cam. It's just that general wear and tear, right? If you did this a lot, I would think that, let's say you rented out your car 4 or 5 days a week, over time, you may end up losing money. But it seems like for those kind of one-off days, and, you know, there are a lot of people who maybe they don't work a certain day of the week or they work from home, and a great opportunity to do something like this.
Yeah, it's like Airbnb for cars.
Yes, very similar.
I don't know if they want me to describe it that way, but that's what it reminds me of. It's like,
me too.
You've got this property, you know, this equity, and you're not using it, but for whatever reason, you don't want to get rid of it because you might need it later, or it's just, it makes more sense to you know, to keep it in your name. So that's where Getaround comes in. Love Getaround. Okay, so we have, besides car rental, we have a very, very jam-packed show. In fact, a lot of Facebook news. Lot of Facebook news. So we will get to that in just a moment. But quickly, we want to remind everyone that if you're not watching us live, we do record the Social Hour live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Please do join us live if you can. It's kind of fun. You feel like you're there with us. You can chat in our chat room. Send us little notes on Twitter. Feedback in real time. But if you can't watch us live, that's okay too. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where you can find all of our show archives. You can see what Amber and I talked about last week. Last week was War of the Instagrams for Video. If you didn't catch that, you'll definitely want to catch it. Look how much fun we were having.
We were having a lot of fun,
laugh,
that show.
Laugh. So yes, that's our website, twit.tv/TSH. You can find subscribe links as well. If you want to subscribe to our show and make sure that you don't miss any of them, probably the best way to do it is right from our website. And if you have any feedback for us, you can email us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, let's thank Ford Tech for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. We talk about Ford quite a bit here at Twit, but it makes perfect sense because they're doing a lot of great technical stuff. See, I went right from Get Around into Ford. The technology of cars continues. Ford features all electric and hybrid electric technologies. So let's talk a little bit about what some of your options are. Two new vehicles that Ford is bringing these electric technologies to are the 2012 Ford Focus Electric and the 2013 C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid. Both models make use of something called regenerative braking system. Hard for me to say, but easier to explain. Basically captures back to 90% of kinetic energy that's usually lost in conventional engines to heat due to friction. So the system is sending energy to the battery pack, keeping it for later, and also includes Sync with MyFord Touch EV features to help you maximize your range. It's really smart stuff. The suite of driver information systems, so you can help manage that recharge process. You know what's going on under the hood. You can determine what's the best route for me. I want to be eco-friendly. I want to make the least amount of carbon footprint here. Let's get the right route for my trip to IKEA. You can remotely control the vehicle charge, preconditioned settings. That's cool. You can monitor your battery state of charge. I mean, you can really, really make use of what is going on with your car, whether you're in it or not. And really, it's maximizing energy efficiency. Driver Connect technology optimized for electrified driving, for configuring vehicle information. That means like stuff like fuel level, battery power level, average and instant miles per gallon. And there's a smartphone app. So you can access your vehicle status, state of charge, current range. You can access your program charge settings. You can download vehicle data for analysis. I mean, it gets really deep. Again, that's available in the 2012 Ford Focus Electric. That's available for reservations now, by the way. And the 2013 Ford C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid, which is coming in fall 2013. If you're in the market for a new car, definitely keep Ford in mind because the stuff that they're doing is awesome. It is unlike any other company out there. They're very much forging the way for the next generation of car technology. If you want to learn more about this, I told you a lot. There's a lot of information, but Ford actually has a really good website where they do a lot of explanation of what exactly is offered in their cars, what you can take control of, and so on at Ford.com/technology. So again, that's Ford.com/technology for a lot of information on everything we covered and the models that this will be available in and models that are coming soon. And we thank Ford very much for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Amber, are you ready to tackle Facebook news?
Oh, my goodness, Sarah. Can I just tell you that for the past few days, every couple of days, there was some major announcement involving Facebook. Probably one of the most interesting and perhaps controversial was the announcement that Facebook will now allow users to essentially pay to have posts highlighted. So let's say not enough people are viewing your status updates. And according to an article on TechCrunch, only about 12% of your Facebook friends will see your status update. You can then pay to get more people, give more people access to that update. I am not a fan of this. Maybe I'm missing something.
I'm not either. So this news came out on Friday, and I was talking about it with a couple folks. It was actually on TNT because HackFi's Shannon Morse was our guest that day. And she said, hey, I don't mind this idea because if I've got something I want to promote or something that I want to sell, something I'm excited about, and I just happen to have a very busy news feed, and I know that my friends, well, my friends have very busy news feeds, of which I am many friends, and there's a chance that they just won't see it, I might want to pay just a little bit to make sure that it's kind of, you know, it's kind of that sticky update that more people end up seeing. I agree with her in essence, but I feel like that is more the job of a brand, a Facebook page, not a personal profile. That's where I think that the lines are a little bit blurred. I don't want personal profiles to act like brands. And I feel like this functionality makes us act more like brands, or at least gives us the option to. So, you know, you and I both spend a fair amount of time promoting the things that we do on social networks. You know, on Twitter, we'll say, hey, we're live now, or check out the latest episode of The Social Hour with our guest Jessica Scorpio from Get Around, or we do that on Facebook or Google Plus. But I think it's assumed by everybody who gets our updates that we're not paying for that. We're just trying to get the word out. And I think that if you don't know whether someone has paid a little bit extra or not, that's the no-no, because there's like a credibility issue, I guess, involved when you start getting money in the mix.
Yeah, one of the issues I have too is I get it. You know, I understand there are things that I want to promote. I'm always posting new articles I've written, or if I'm doing a speaking event, and I understand that. You know, sometimes individuals, even if they have personal profile pages or accounts, consider themselves, you know, a brand per se. It may just be a personal brand. But the reality is, to allow people to do this within their status update, I think the placement of this is entirely wrong. If you're an individual or a company, you're able to go and buy ads, you know, sponsored ads on the side of Facebook that we see all the time. And it seems nice that that real estate is kind of dedicated to advertisements. I think to go and actually mess with the one piece of real estate on Facebook that has historically been sort of this organic space that people, you know, post their updates, what they're thinking, is a huge mistake from Facebook's standpoint. So I think just that, again, just messing with that status update and something that has always been kind of authentic and hasn't had any type of payment attached to it.
I agree. I totally agree with you, and we'll see what happens, by the way. This is something that Facebook apparently was trying in New Zealand. Not sure why that they chose New Zealand as a test country, but some users in New Zealand had noticed late last week and said, what's up with this? Facebook, a spokesperson from Facebook has said, we're going to see how this goes. If it seems to go well, we'll consider opening it up to other markets. We don't know if they will open it up to other markets, and if so, which markets they will be. But again, it just depends on how it sticks. Facebook's about to IPO. They want revenue. They want new streams of revenue. They do very well with advertising, but they need to think outside the box, I guess. So this is just, it's one of those experiments, I guess, and we'll have to see how far they take it.
I just wonder, you know, how long are people going to put up with being almost like a little experiment in a petri dish, so like Zuckerberg and all of his friends can sort of, you know, see what sticks and what doesn't stick. And I think that's the thing that bugs me about Facebook sometimes, is we've talked before about that hacker mentality, the way that they want to go in and just try something, see what happens, even if they irritate some of their users. And I feel like that approach is, I just don't know how long people are going to be patient with it. So not a big supporter of it.
Well, maybe you will be a big supporter of Facebook's new App Center, which is, it sounds like, oh, okay, that's Facebook's version of App Store, which a lot of, you know, Amazon's got one. Obviously, Google Play is Google's Android marketplace, the renamed one. Now Facebook's got the App Center, but it actually doesn't work the way an App Store works. Not yet, anyway. The idea behind Facebook's App Center is to point to apps that use Facebook login functionality but actually live in other proprietary app stores. For example, if I wanted to download the Spotify app, well, Spotify uses Facebook login. Spotify is actually a weird example because you can only log in via Facebook. Let's say I wanted to log into, I'm trying to think of another another social network that uses Facebook login as a choice. A lot of them do. Sometimes they'll say, you know, do you want to set up an account? Do you want to log in through Facebook? Do you want to log in through Twitter? You have a few options. If the app allows you to log in via Facebook, it will get featured in Facebook's App Center. The app doesn't actually live in the App Center. If it's an iOS app, maybe, or an Android app, it will then just be linked to in the App Center. And if I say, if I'm within the Facebook experience and I say, okay, the Yelp app, for example, I want to get this, it will then, dump me back into, in my case, the iOS store, where that I can go download the app. So you think, well, what is Facebook's incentive for this? Are they getting money from Apple by featuring the apps? No, they're not. What they're getting, though, is more and more people using Facebook Connect, which helps Facebook collect data on us by using apps that make use of Facebook login functionality. And they don't really care if you download the app from the iOS store or the Android store or whatever. What they also will be offering, though, is HTML5 apps. We don't see a lot of those yet, but they do exist. These are apps that can be run basically on any platform. They don't depend on Apple or Android or really any brand. They're apps that can run in a browser. Those apps they may be free, but they don't necessarily need to be free. Facebook will consider allowing developers to charge for an app, of which Facebook will take 30%, which is a somewhat familiar percentage. It's what Apple takes from what developers make in their store. So it sounds like, again, different experience with revenue streams, but a new place for all of your apps. Amber, to me, Facebook is not the place I think about going to for apps. But
no.
If they do this right, do you think that our view of this will change?
Well, I think this is just another move on Facebook's behalf to become a more prominent player in the mobile space. You know, we've talked about this before. They know they have to have a bigger push on the mobile front because they're losing out on advertising opportunities there, and they want to try to build up their engagement. So I can't really see personally doing this. I think it's a simple move for them. However, I think that they totally did a terrible job last week of getting out to press and explaining what they were launching, because I know I did an interview about it on Thursday, and I'm 100% positive the anchor who interviewed me still has no idea how this app center works. Mm-hmm. And people were thinking that, oh, all of a sudden, you know, Facebook's building its own apps and it's going to compete with iTunes. And even some of the early headlines, I think, led people in that direction. And like you said, it's entirely different. So I think it makes sense for them. But I think, again, there may be some confusion to people around what exactly is in here. You know, you can perhaps download a Facebook app, but maybe another app you're going to click on that you want to download, you're going to get pushed out to one of the other app stores. So it's interesting and not a big surprise, I don't think.
PC Guy in our chat room says, Facebook would be the last place I would trust for apps. Well, I guess you must be talking about the HTML5 apps that might not be featured anywhere else, because again, these aren't apps that Facebook created, and they're not apps that I mean, it's a process, right? If somebody wants to get their app featured by Facebook, and it's an HTML5 app, let's just say, they'll have to be, I don't know, there's a checklist of some kind. I obviously haven't seen it. I don't know exactly what Facebook will be looking for, but one would assume they don't want crappy apps in there because they don't want people to associate Facebook with a bunch of crappy apps, which is something that people have historically associated Facebook with. You know, oh, those stupid casino apps, and, you know, the Facebook app experience as it's been thus far is not, sort of this beautiful, enriching experience.
No, for it's the not most a quality part. Experience.
Yeah. So, I love the idea that they want to revamp the way that we think about Facebook for apps. But it remains to be seen. I guess it depends on how they roll it out, and maybe search is great. I know for me, I'm only concerned with one app store because I don't have two phones or two devices that use two different mobile OSs. But I guess if you maybe you had an Android phone and you had an iPad, somewhere like Facebook might be a good place to get a good sense of apps you could get on both platforms. Just trying to think of when this would be helpful for me.
Yeah, I almost wish that when they launched their app store, what they did instead was to take some of their Facebook apps that they have and some of the problems that they have and fix some of those problems and maybe had more of a curated collection of apps in there, stuff that they recommended. Because like you mentioned, I've downloaded apps before on Facebook. Some of them just plainly don't work, right? There's issues with them. They're buggy. They tell friends your things that you don't want to tell them. So if they focused maybe on fixing their own apps first and then integrated this, it might have been a better approach just to kind of slow down the process of building up the store. But again, it's the Facebook way, right?
It is the Facebook way. They do forge their own way. And yes, and we kind of all have to deal with it. They have so many users. That's the thing. I mean, it's great. I love watching the comments. So many people are down on Facebook. You know, it's easy to say, Facebook is just a passing fad, that sort of thing. And I don't know that that's not true. I think that it probably, it's having its day now. And we see services rise and decline. And I mean, look at Yahoo. Not to get into all the Yahoo drama that's going on right now, but great example of just, you know, nothing lasts forever, right? But for now, Facebook is on the up and up. I mean, it's gaining users. It is about to IPO. It is a really big deal right now. So all of these new initiatives that they roll out are all very fascinating and very different than what we've seen before. Another thing that's upsetting people, especially people who aren't crazy about Facebook, but might be Hulu subscribers, is Hulu Social. There is a social aspect to Hulu where, Amber, you and I could connect on Hulu and share the sorts of things that we're watching and that, you know, our respective cues and that sort of thing. But it turns out that the social aspects of Hulu have pretty much been dumped over to Facebook. You must now connect with your Facebook account to use the social elements of Hulu, or you can't be social at all on Hulu. How does this sit with you?
I don't know. You know, I think it's just too much, right? I'm reading through the article, and aside from really loving the headline, which is hilarious about Hulu to users, connect your Facebook account or no social for you. It reminds me a little bit, I think we talked last week, it was the Washington Post and their reader app, I believe that's it, where all of a sudden will notify people about what you're reading. I think the same thing applies to TV shows. And the first paragraph of the article kind of touches on that a little bit. You don't always want people knowing exactly what you're reading or watching in real time. So I think it's a really dumb move on Hulu's part to tie themselves so tightly with Facebook.
Yeah, it's interesting to PC Guy again. Thank you, PC Guy. You're being very vocal today, assuming that you're a guy. Says, isn't this like Spotify? Well, Spotify is a service that requires you to log in via Facebook to use your Facebook credentials. Hulu wasn't like this until recently. So the issue that some of Hulu users who do use these social elements, for example, the Forbes article about this new change at Hulu quotes a user named Karen who says she used to have the ability to have friends, to IM friends as an instant message them, the ability to see friends' activities, comment streams. That's all just gone now. So she goes ahead and says, okay, well, I still want to have this functionality, and she logs in with her Facebook account. Some of those friends might not necessarily be her Facebook friends. So it's already breaking a system that people are actually using. That's what bothers me about this. It's like, well, you know, if it's Hulu's prerogative to use one universal login and they decide to go with Facebook because that's where all the users are, well, that's annoying, but I kind of get it. What I don't get is, hey, we already have this social element to our service that at least enough people are using to make it worth it to keep, and we're just going to break that and go with something else. I mean, that's what a way to alienate users. And Hulu is not a great experience to begin with. So they could use some better mojo really right now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, Facebook news, I think, in this week's show that is a little bit depressing. I will say we have one more Facebook story, and then I actually have a positive tip about something cool you can do on Facebook. So just for people who are feeling really down about using Facebook, I have a cool little trick that you can use just after this next story about Facebook killing text messaging. This is not a big surprise. I watch, especially my, I have younger cousins who are 13 and 15 who don't really text message anymore. They do a lot of messaging through Facebook and sometimes other services. So I believe that this is what this article is about.
Yes, that's exactly it. This is one of those articles that I kind of laugh at a little bit because text messaging has always been this very annoying part of cell phone bills for me. Because you have to buy a package of text messages. In fact, I still don't have a way, I use Verizon right now as my carrier, to just not buy any text messages, which I would like to do because I don't actually have to text when I can use my data plan and something like Facebook, but I digress. But in the past, because texting is something that we all do, well, many of us do, and I happen to text a lot more than I actually talk to people on the phone. So my text plans used to have to be really, really high. I would have to buy, you know, unlimited texts per month, that sort of thing, because I didn't want to have to pay an exorbitant fee if I went over the plan that I had picked. But if I don't have to use SMS, and I can just text, Amber and I can text each other via the Facebook platform, which, by the way, is only one of many. There's GroupMe, there's Pair for two people, there's, let me think, how else could we do it? Well, if we both have iPhones, there's Messages, which uses data and it doesn't count against SMS anymore. So the whole SMS thing is going away, absolutely. I love how reports end up coming out in the New York Times saying Facebook is killing text messaging. Well, Facebook really isn't killing it. It's just that Facebook Messenger is a pretty decent app, and you happen to have a lot of people who are just already in your contact list because they're your Facebook friends, so it works pretty well. That app is great. On my iPhone, I love the Facebook Messenger app. It used to be Beluga, which was a standalone service that Facebook bought last year-ish, something around that. About a year ago or so. So it's the way that it's the way of the future. And one day I would like to say no SMS plan for me. Zero.
Yeah.
Do not take $5.
I also think in terms of the way people are using their phones these days, and I know just in terms of how I use my smartphone, is that more and more places that I'm going to offer free Wi-Fi, right? So even in the past few months, when the first things that I do if I'm going to a conference or a coffee shop or a restaurant is just say, do you have Wi-Fi? And many times there is an access point that you can log on to. And that kind of negates the need to be able to text message someone. Because like you said, I use Twitter a lot for just messaging, Facebook, and some of these other tools. So, you know, SMS is dying. And that's a fantastic thing. Because if you think about how much money we've all spent on SMS over the years, it's not pretty for anyone except for the telcos.
Right. And it's not expensive for them to provide SMS. That's why you see these fees, and it's like they're just sort of like, all right, well, how much profit do we want to make? Let's just say $8, you know, for 100 texts. Exactly. It's like they're just, you know, it's been a great revenue stream. Kudos to you all, but we have other options now. And again, Facebook is not the only one. That's right. But we're going to take back our data plans.
We are. Well, soon. Almost. Okay, eventually. So some positive Facebook news and a really helpful little tip that I just discovered on socialmediaexaminer.com. Sarah, I don't know if you've run into this problem, but I have a few times. I'll want to post something on Facebook. I just had an experience last week where a friend of mine, Mark Salzman, wrote a book called Siri for Dummies. So a great book if you want to learn more about how to use Siri. So he sent me a link. I posted the link on my Facebook page and I said, hey, check this out if you want to learn more about using Siri. And of course it shows up is this really ugly link. There's no image attached to it. A really ugly update on my Facebook personal page. I didn't really know how to improve that. You know, I thought, well, maybe I have to go add my own photo or do something creative. But fortunately, I stumbled across this article that tells you you can use this little debugger tool on Facebook. And I've put the link into the notes. And all you do with that debugger tool is you run the link that has sort of the faulty image and problems associated with through this debugger, it changes that URL. And then when you post the URL back into your status update, it will pull an image properly. I don't know if this works every time, but I know it did work for me when I tested it out and just, I didn't post it officially, but tried to post that initial link again. So, hopefully I haven't confused anyone, but a really simple way, again, to have sort of a prettier link posted on your Facebook updates.
Absolutely. This is, I can't wait to try this out because something weird happened to me last week. It was, I every so often, you know, want to post on Facebook, hey, you know, Amber and I finished a great episode of The Social Hour, check it out. And I'll add the link to our episode page. And it's usually pretty good about pulling our album art, which is, you know, You're in My Face, and it says The Social Hour, with the appropriate episode, which is just from the link at twit.tv. But I did something different last week. This was actually for an episode of iPad Today, where I did all of that, and then underneath I thought, you know, I'll also use this opportunity to let people know, I'll add the link to just subscribe directly via iTunes so that they could go to twit.tv if they want, or maybe they could just go to the iTunes subscribe page, which I don't usually tell people to do, at least, you know, via links. And when I copied and pasted the link into Facebook, it pulled album art from some other show.
Yeah.
The link was correct, but the album art was like something called The iPad Show, which is not the same thing as iPad Today. It was just a totally different thing. And it turns out that at Twit, we don't have the power to, you know, that's something that's going on between iTunes and Facebook, really. It has nothing to do with us. So maybe something like this debugger would have helped me. I wish I had known about it.
I should just let people know it's at developers.facebook.com/tools/debug. But of course, we'll put it in the show notes on The Social Hour. Let us know how you guys have done with this. But like I said, I used it just one time with this one. I'm going to call it a faulty link because it didn't show up well, and it worked perfectly. So really excited to get that so that my posts and my whole timeline will not look so horrid with some of those links that are kind of broken.
Yes, that's a good one. That's a good one. As soon as the show's over, I'm going to see if we can fix my little weird iTunes error. Yeah, so strange. It's like, what the heck? Yeah, that's a great tip. So I think we're done with Facebook. Let's just close the book on that social network. We will not be talking about that network for the rest of the show.
No more Facebook, but we are going to talk about Google Plus, at least briefly. Google Plus has launched or redesigned their iPhone app. And as many people are saying, including an article on TechCrunch and many Google Plus users that I've seen posting about this, they finally got it right. I had a chance to download it and definitely an improved experience as far as just the overall feel of it. Some people have equated it to Path, you know, as far as that kind of fluid experience, really nice design. I was equally impressed. What do you think, Sarah?
I love it. I want to say I love it, and it looks like nothing nothing that Google has ever done before, which makes it sound like I'm not crazy about Google design in general, and that's actually true. I mean, I'm a heavy Google user. I use pretty much all of their products, but I've never once said, wow, you know, Google's really good at is making things look awesome. I think that they are, it's a very functional suite of products that I use with Google. It's definitely part of my life. But this Google Plus iPhone app is really nice looking. And by the way, it works well on the iPad too, even though it's not a native iPad app. If you blow it up because the photos, if the resolution is high enough, just get resized to the iPad so it looks great. Works very well. And looks awesome. The previous Google Plus app was not awesome. It was lacking in many ways. So this is such an upgrade. I do think it's weird that this is Google we're talking about, and the Android app hasn't been updated yet.
You know what? So I use an Android phone as my primary phone. I have an iPhone as well. But I had the Google Plus app downloaded for a couple of weeks. It was so buggy. I actually got rid of it. I don't know if I'm doing something wrong, but it was a terrible experience. I absolutely hated it. So I agree. It's a little strange that this is just for the iPhone and they haven't improved the Android experience. I know some comments on my Google Plus page say exactly the same thing. People are wondering when they'll be able to see a better app for Android, particularly across Android tablets. So fingers crossed that they're working on that too.
absolutely. It's Leo and I were trying to figure out, okay, well, Google bought, you know, at least some members of the Milk team. Of course, that was Kevin Rose and company a couple months ago now. And not the whole team, but at least some of them, they were obviously iOS developers beforehand. Is this the mark of the Milk acquisition? But from what I hear, it isn't, because this is the sort of thing, you know, iPhone apps don't get made in a day, and this has come out pretty soon after they started working at Google. So I think this is an internal project that that they may have had, you know, some hand in, but it doesn't sound like this is like Milk's first project. But who knows, really? Who knows what's going on at Google? I like seeing things like this when people say, wow, look at this awesome Google app. This works really well. It looks really good. And as Chad mentioned to us last week, we didn't even realize this. You can actually have Hangouts from the Google Plus app, which is great.
Yeah, that's kind of fun too. But, you know, I often wonder, Sarah, especially with Google Plus as of late, and we mentioned before about how you're able to edit posts, and maybe the design isn't that beautiful, but it is very functional. And then they come up with the app and it's a really great experience. And then on the Facebook side, we have news that maybe makes the Facebook experience that much more confusing and cluttered. I think this is Google Plus's time to shine. If they're going to do something, it's going to have to be in the next few months, because I think there's such a huge opportunity for them. But we'll see. We'll see.
Indeed, indeed. We got a really funny email from Judy Reagan. Hello, Judy, and thank you so much for being such a loyal viewer. I totally recognize your name. She sent us a really funny image that I wanted to share. I went ahead and shared it to Evernote because it's a good way to share things. Social Media Explained. Okay, I said I wasn't going to mention Facebook one more time in the show, but in this case, I think it's pretty funny. So here are the different ways that donuts are discussed on social media. Via Twitter, I'm eating a donut. Via Facebook, I like donuts. Via Foursquare, this is where I eat donuts. Via Instagram, here's a vintage photo of my donut. Via YouTube, here I am eating a donut. LinkedIn, my skills include donut eating. Pinterest, here's a donut recipe. Last.fm, now listening to donuts. And Google+, I'm a Google employee who eats donuts. Ooh, burn. Burn for Google+. I don't think we can be making those jokes too much longer that only Google employees use Google+. Clearly that's not true.
Yes, I think it's changing pretty, you know, maybe not quickly, but it's changing over time for sure. But yeah, that's great. I've seen that before. It's a lot of fun. Great little image to use if you're doing a presentation too and you want to describe the different social networks. That always works well. So thank you so much to Judy for that. And Sarah, for our next piece of feedback, City Pockets is closing down. I guess we talked about them in episode 23.
Yeah, it was a lifetime ago. City Pockets was, if you don't remember, it was actually really cool. So let's say that you are really into coupon sites. So the Groupon, Living Social, Amazon, Daily Deals, I guess that's what they called, Local Deals. And there are a variety of others, Scout Mob, Bloom Spot. I'm one of these coupon people, so I've got a whole folder in my Gmail that's just reserved for coupons, and they get out of control. So what City Pockets was aiming to do was sort of be a one-stop place to keep all of your coupons in one place. In fact, we talked about it on the show in the form of their app, which was really nice, which was almost sort of worked like a wallet, where you've got your deals, stuff that you've bought that needs to be redeemed, stuff that you want to save for later, that sort of thing. So it was a great service. They have decided to close down, which is sad because, you know, it's a tough world out there in the startup world. For every Facebook, you know, there are a lot of other companies that have to pivot or close down completely. In City Pockets' case, it sounds like they're doing a little bit of a pivot. And what I mean by that is they're closing down what they've been working on and they're spinning it into something else. It sounds like Reclip It, so reclip.it, is their next venture. And from what I can see, I haven't played around with it too much, but my first impression is they describe it as the easiest way to discover and share online sales and deals curated by sources you trust most. Okay, so that's sort of what they were already doing, but in a Pinterest type of a way. This is a very Pinteresty way to keep better handle on all of the daily deals stuff out there. This could be good for them. It sounds like they still believe in the general idea, but they wanted to spin it into something that's maybe more relevant. Obviously, the Pinterest model works really well, not just for Pinterest, but for a lot of companies that are emulating it right now. So best of luck to Reclip it, and we're sorry to see City Pockets go. But we do like to feature companies and services that we have talked about on the past on the Social Hour, because sometimes they change, sometimes they go away, and we got to keep tabs on the stuff.
Keep up to date with them. Sarah, just quickly, I know I didn't put this in the rundown, but I wanted to mention, because I got a tweet from Dave Carroll, and we had him on the show a while ago. He is the singer-songwriter behind United Breaks Guitars, and his book is just out this week. So The Power of One Voice in the Age of Social Media. So if you want to pick that copy up, I think there are a bunch of them on Amazon right now. So congrats to him.
Congrats. Get that book. Get it. United Breaks Guitars, The Power of One Voice in the Age of Social Media. I love that cover. That's a good one.
I know. It's great.
It's great.
Nice job.
Congratulations, Dave. He was awesome.
Yeah.
Next time we'll have him as a musical guest or something. He can come back and sing us a melody.
I know. That would be a lot of fun. He's very talented and probably pretty good at making up songs based on that one song.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's a professional and all. Want to remind everyone, before we get to Rad or Fad in this episode of The Social Hour, that we do love to hear from you. You can write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv, but you have other options too. If you're not an emailer, that's cool. You can leave us a Google Voice voicemail. The number, it's a very creative number, 2626-SOCIAL. When I signed up for our Google Voice number, when Amber and I decided to do the Social Hour, I wanted something that said social in it so that you could remember it easily. But this tends to be a number that throws people off. So just remember, 2626-SOCIAL, whatever those numbers are that correspond, and I don't have that in my head. If you want to send us a tweet, you can hashtag Social Hour to help us find it more easily. Or you can always record a video, upload it, and then send us the link for where the video lives somewhere online, like YouTube or Vimeo or SocialCam or any other place. Just don't send us video files because we don't want to open those. Links are better for us. And thank you in advance, because we love the more feedback we get from you, the more we can feature you on our show. All right, Amber, are you ready for Rad or Fad? Because I know
I am ready. Okay, so for this week's Rad or Fad, I stumbled across an app. It's called More Beauty 2. I found it, of course, on shinyshiny.tv, where I find a lot of different fun links. Now, I'm sure there are other apps out there that do this, but I thought this one was probably the most interesting. The idea being, it's almost like photoshopping on the fly. This has nothing to do with Adobe, and Adobe is not behind the app, but it does allow you to take a picture of yourself, and then you can use a bunch of different settings like brightness and contrast and a couple others to actually change the image so you look more beautiful. And I say that in quotes. Now, this is kind of fun. I just went to a spinning class a couple hours ago, and I came home and I took a horrible picture of myself that I'm not going to share. And I went in and I used the app, and I have to say it took an absolutely horrible picture where I had like dark circles in my eyes, my hair in a ponytail, really dark room, kind of that grainy lighting that just doesn't make anyone look good. And I used this app to kind of brighten it up. And by the end of it, it looked okay. So I don't necessarily condone, you know, photoshopping images all the time. But I don't know if this fits in rad or fad. I guess it's rad if you need something on the fly to make yourself look good.
Well, okay. So here, Chad, stay on this picture for a second. So here are two screenshots on their app page. This is a free app, by the way. And the company, which is, what's the name of the company? It's More Thing, which is more-thing.com. They do a lot of stuff. They've got apps, they've got, you know, iPad covers, all sorts of things. But in both of these cases, it's defreckalizing a person.
I know.
That's probably
that
not a
weird.
Real word, but I'm actually extremely familiar with defreckalizing because I actually do this myself. I mean, I wear makeup every day because I'm trying to cover my freckles. Sometimes in pictures, you can use certain filters, hue and saturation, to kind of get rid of those. But when I see it on other people, it's so funny. It's like I look at that cute little girl and I'm like, oh, she was cute with the freckles. Why are you getting rid of the freckles?
I know.
And, you know, and the grown up lady too. It's like, it's funny the way that you see yourself versus other people. So this is probably a great app for all of us who are just we have some level of narcissism and we want to look as good as possible. Absolutely. I will take any free app that might make a mediocre picture of me look a little bit better. But at the same time, I think it's all in the eye of the beholder. Because I look at these people and I'm like, you didn't need it.
They look great. And I actually think it's a little bit misleading the way they present it, right? Because where it could become useful is a situation like I had where I just don't have great lighting or I didn't at the time when I was taking the photo. You're not looking your best and you want something just really quickly to kind of spruce it up and to make it look a little bit better. But I think the whole category almost is a bit of a fad, right? You know, everybody's trying to latch on to the whole popularity of Instagram and all the different filters, but these guys have decided to go the beauty angle, and I'm sure a lot of people will appreciate it. I mean, I don't love that models are photoshopped in magazines and on the covers. I think it's very misleading. But, you know, a quick little app like this, you know, I don't know how much harm it can do, but I would put the whole category into the fad category. We're in the filter age of technology right now.
That's right. Everyone wants to be airbrushed to perfection.
They do.
And one day, I don't know when, the pendulum will swing the other way and it'll be like, the grittier you are, the better.
Yeah.
You know, the more imperfections you have, the cooler you are. I'd love that day to be tomorrow.
Because
then I could
today,
just stop
Sarah.
Trying completely. Or today, yeah. Later today, maybe. But yeah, I agree with you. I think that this is pretty hot right now. And you probably have nothing to lose by giving it a shot. But it's just the way things... You know, it's like how music is very... Not all music, but so much music is so highly produced right now that it's like, it's like there aren't any hard edges. So, you know, it's great, but it's not very authentic.
You know, yeah.
I'm only talking about a certain kind of music, so I don't want the Dave Carrolls out there to think that I think that their music is terrible, but I think you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I think, like I said, I think it's, you know, this fad could go away at any time, but who knows? If you need a quick fix, I guess this might do. Let's say you have a job interview coming up. For some reason, you have to send a picture of yourself to someone. Who knows what it might be? You want to just kind of brighten it up and highlight the image. I mean, I have to admit, I've sat there with Chris, who's my partner, and he does a lot of video editing on stuff I've done. And I'm always like, can you color correct that video? to give me, you know, just so it looks a little bit better. So we use these tools. Unfortunately.
Yep, we do. It's funny. The chat room is like, what is wrong with you girls? You're fine. Thank you.
This is what
happens sometimes when you work in front of the cameras. You spend a lot of time seeing yourself. Mm. Oh gosh.
But Sarah and I are real here on the Social Hour. So when you're tuning in, there's no professional makeup. We're real, you know.
That's
no filters.
True.
None of that stuff. This is the real us. That's why you should tune in every weekend.
Exactly,
never know what you're going to get.
Exactly. Freckles and all, we are here for you. Except that we're actually not anymore because we're about to end the show. This has been a great hour. We had Jessica Scorpio of Get Around, co-founder and director of marketing. We had a big Facebook block because Facebook just will not stay out of the news. And a lot of tips and tricks. Hopefully you got a lot out of it. But we are at the end of our hour, so we will be back next week, same time, same place. And for everyone who does watch us live, next Monday is going to be a special Monday because we're going to do back-to-back shows. We'll do a show at our regular time, and then immediately following the preceding hour. The hour immediately following the show, we're going to do another episode. So it'll be 2 hours next week of the Social Hour. It'll be great.
Hopefully 2 hours of us in the raw. You cannot
coffee.
Miss it.
Yeah. But for now, that's it. Thanks to everybody for joining Amber and me. Remember, we're live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. And you can find our show in iTunes and on the web and pretty much everywhere, even on YouTube. Search for us on YouTube. You'll find us there, too. Until next time, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you soon.